it. Bye-bye.
This is your Orioles Radio Network Game Rewind.
And tonight, game number 117 in the regular season. Tonight in Oakland, here at Ricky Henderson Field, Orioles and the Athletics are about to engage in game three of this four-game series. Orioles here tonight trying to get back in the win column after blowing an eighth-inning lead in the ballgame here last night. Dylan Bundy tonight looking for his fourth consecutive victory. The skipper, Buck Showalter, and the manager's report right after this.
All right, back at the Oakland Coliseum, and the skipper, Buck Showalter. This is the manager's report. Buck, about that game last night, Ubaldo Jimenez, I think, had like 11 strikeouts in his first 4 1/3 innings. I think at one time, 10 consecutive outs were strikeouts. So was that as good a stuff as you've ever seen Ubaldo have?
No, he's had some really good outings, Joe. I'm not one of those guys who just throws out everything that's ever happened here. He was sharp last night. I think they really had to honor the fastball in that started at the left-hander's hands and ran on the inner half, which made him cheat and opened up a lot of other pitches for him. And so on both sides of the plate, had a good tempo. He's been carrying quality stuff, and he's, you know, really the first time this year for an extended period of time he's been able to maintain his delivery. And it's hard to, and you know, I see all the work that Roger and him do all the time trying to maintain that. It's one thing to have it on the fifth day. Can you maintain it between starts?
Yeah, he's been so consistent. All of a sudden he's one of your better pitchers. You said after the game last night with Ubaldo, it's all about fastball command. And I think for some fans that's kind of difficult to understand.
Why? I mean, really, fastball is four different pitches. You know, and because of the location, and let's face it, it's 10 miles an hour faster than anything else. That's a big gap, and being able to make the hitter respect your ability to command a fastball opens up everything. You know, now they have to honor the fastball, which makes them have to hurry. It's all about upsetting timing at this level, or pitch sequence and the height you throw pitches. And sometimes the worst pitch you can throw is a pitch that's in the strike zone. And there's a lot of guys that are wild in the strike zone.
Yeah. Let me ask you about Ubaldo, because you get into a situation, home run hitters, they get home run happy. Hitters do that sometimes. Do you notice when a pitcher is getting strikeout happy?
Maybe. An out's an out. Okay. Unfortunately, guys that strike a lot of people out usually get their pitch count up because guys aren't putting balls in play off of them early outs. And the thing that Ubaldo's been doing, he's been getting outs. He's been able to finish off counts. He's 0-2, 1-2, and not going 3-2. Mm-hmm. And he's been able to minimize some of the pitches.
How about the bullpen last time? Michael Givens came out, got a couple of big double play balls. Brad Brock in the eighth inning, what'd you see?
Just elevated. You know, some pitches that he normally doesn't throw. And, you know, Brad's been very good for us. It's funny, you know, we pitch the sixth and seventh inning, and Brad pitches the eighth inning, and say Zach pitches the ninth inning, and nobody says a word. But all they want to talk about after the game last night is one of the better relief pitchers in baseball, maybe because he spoiled us at such a high level. And every once in a while, the other team does some things good, too. But, you know, Brad just one of the nights where he couldn't get it going, and we're lucky to have him.
Again, back in Oakland, and again with a manager's report, Buck, Chris Davis last night, 0-for-3, got a walk. Did you see better at-bats?
Oh, I thought they were more contact-oriented. Thought he was engaged. Not that he's not. I just thought they were a little bit better form at-bats, but he's going to face a tough left-hander tonight, and you know, it's about maintaining things, and it's always a work in progress for every player. You know, you're always trying to do things much like pitching to maintain an approach.
When you're looking for better at bats, what are you looking for?
More hits. Yeah, of course. And his contact to damage ratio is very good. You know, we constantly are talking about different players, whether it's him, whether it's Trumbo, then it's Manny. And this is hard to do. You're going to go through ups and downs. You try to shorten the good, the bad times and stretch out the good ones. But, you know, I think Chris has got a real good streak ahead of left in him, and it would be big for him and Mark to get in that.
Yeah. About the game tonight, Dylan Bundy looking for a fourth consecutive victory. What's he doing right these days?
Well, I know you don't want to hear it. He's commanding the fastball, and that's it opens up everything. And you know, Dylan gets a feel early in a game what's there for him. You know, I got a feel for the curveball, I got a feel for the change, I got a feel for the sliders, the command of my fastball. And pitchers have to figure out a way to survive because you're not going to have all four working, and you got to very quickly find out what you have some confidence in, something that you can make the hitters respect more than one pitch.
Over on the Oakland side, final question. Sean Manea pitching for them. He has not won a game, I think, in his last four starts. So when he is winning, you hate that, don't you? When he is winning, how does he get people out?
Fastball changeup, really good changeup, a fade change. It's not a straight change, it's a fade change. Good command of a plus fastball. Believe me, if they didn't like him, people are lined up to get this guy. He's very well respected around baseball. He's going to be a challenge for us.
All right, very good, Buck. Thank you. Game three coming up in Oakland.
Oakland tonight, it's a lovely night. And in a moment, Jim Hunter and Ray Fosse, former big league catcher, they will talk about the ever elusive strike zone when we continue right after this.
Orioles and Athletics, game three of the four-game series here tonight in Oakland, and a chance to visit with our friend, former Major League All-Star Ray Fosse, who is an expert on the strike zone, and he's going to help us make some sense of the floating strike zone we see day in and day out. Now, you broke in very young, 1967-68, still the golden era of pitching. Then they lower the mound in 1969. Can you compare what you saw then as a young catcher to what you see now?
The biggest thing, Jim, is seeing a four-man rotation when I came up to five-man now. And guys happy making 32 to 35 starts when guys were making 40 to 42 starts, depending on how good you were. But I think there's been a big difference. And it took Bob Gibson, I guess, having the 1.12 ERA to lower the mound to make sure that, hey, these pitchers are too dominant. But pitching is always dominant. It should be that way. And I think now with the Quest Tech or grading of umpires, if you will, based on how they call strikes. And I'm going, we put a box up, and I talked to Eddie Montague. He says, that's not the true box. That's not what we go by. And I says, well, why does the MLB authorize you to do it? And it's their thing. So it's really kind of confusing. I would like to see the pace of the game have umpires call strikes. Force the hitters to swing the bat. And if they do that, you don't have to worry about guys stepping out or complaining. If you call strikes and call them consistently, you're going to get more guys swinging the bat and be forced to swing the bat instead of taking a pitch.
All right, let me ask you this, because you mentioned the box that you have on your telecast. If you get out the Major League rule book, there's a picture of the strike zone. I've been calling Major League games since 1986. I don't think I've ever seen the strike zone that's in the rule book. And what's this with the umpires? It's their strike zone, individual umpires. I don't understand that.
I agree 100%, and that's why good pitchers know who's umpiring behind the plate. Let's say a pitcher is going to be pitching the third game of the series. They see the umpire at second, knowing he's going to be behind the plate. What kind of an umpire is he? Does he call strikes low, high, outside, inside, whatever? But you have to know them, because every umpire is individual. And I think they talk about putting a computer. I hope they don't do that. You know, it's one thing to have the appeals and the challenges and the bases and home runs and all that, but don't do it to a strike zone, because every umpire is different. And I think from a catcher standpoint, remember, I caught in an era where we had guys, and I remember a Catfish Hunter, Jim Hunter, your namesake, would be pitching the game. The umpire, as they stood behind home plate, to kind of look at the pitches, and I hear him say, this is going to be a fast game. And seriously, I would split the outside part of the plate. I wouldn't move. I'd catch the ball, strike. I'd keep moving out. And I know when I caught Dennis Eckersley's no-hitter in 77 on Memorial Day, the umpire, he won't be part of history. The late Bobby Bonds came up and he said to the umpire, would you at least let him get close to home plate? Because I ended up being in a left-handed batter's box. But it's a matter of who are playing for. Because when I went back to Cleveland, and I remember Frank Robinson was with the Orioles, and whenever I was playing for the A's and he was playing, the strike zone was pitcher-friendly. When I went back to Cleveland and Frank came up, I tried the same thing. The umpire said to me simply, you're not in Oakland anymore. This is a different pitching staff. But it does change. But you're right. Every umpire is different in the strike zone.
How does it affect a catcher who's calling a game? And obviously you have a game plan for whatever pitcher is starting that night. He then has to know, okay, what does my pitcher have? And, oh, by the way, what is this guy behind me going to call?
You know, that's a great point, because, first of all, I don't know that with all the scouting reports now that you're going to see catchers doing the job that they're supposed to do. And I've said it, and whether it's been live on the air or like now, because I remember asking Larry Rothschild, who's a pitching coach in New York, I said, Larry, how many times you think a catcher or how many catchers look at hitters' feet? And he says zero, which that's the most important thing, because as a catcher before all the scouting reports, my job was to call a game based on my pitcher's strength. That's the key, Jimmy, because people say, well, this guy can't hit this, can't hit that. I said, well, maybe my pitcher can't throw that pitch. What are the strengths of my pitcher? And that's how I would call a game. And it was incumbent on us as catchers in that era to know the hitters, because we didn't have all the scouting reports. We didn't have minor league play. We didn't have the video to show what guys did and did not do. So as Catfish Hunter would say, when I'd say, why don't you ever shake me off? And he said, because your job is to tell me what to throw and where to throw it, and I'm going to do that. Because he said, you know the hitters, I don't. And a catcher's behind the plate, if he catches every day, he knows the hitters from pitcher to pitcher. But bottom line, if you know your pitcher's strengths, then that's the key, no matter who's behind the plate, because you find a figure out, you know the umpire, you know, stay down low, give him a good target and a good view to be able to see the pitch. And that's one thing I took pride in, staying as low as possible for the umpire to say, I like you because I can see the pitches, which if he says that to me, that means that I can move, I can do things. But what I see now, Jimmy, catchers will sit up in the middle of the plate and then move outside or inside. Why? If you know that predominantly your pitcher is going to pitch outside, split the outside part of the plate, give a target, put up your, or give a sign, put your target up, and let him pitch. You don't have to move. If hitters were smart today, in the on-deck circle, I've watched games in this series already, I would start whistling and just let the hitter know who, when I'm in the on-deck circle, that the pitcher is going to pitch inside because the catcher moves too soon. There's a key. More catchers tip pitches than pitchers. And it's hard to believe that, but the way the catcher moves, because if they set up in the middle of the plate, they got to move one way or the other. They're not going to stay in the middle. So why not start inside or outside instead of starting in the middle and start to move?
Well, Ray Fosse made his big league debut in 1967 at the age of 20. And he also appeared in the World Series against the Orioles in 1973. He went just 1-for-11 in that series, but the Athletics had a good time as Ray Fosse and the Athletics against the Orioles came out the champions of that World Series championship. That was the ALCS, I meant, not the World Series in 73. Stay tuned now for Orioles baseball.
Good morning to you, and hello again, baseball fans. Joe Angel, Jim Hunter, back in Oakland in the win column today. They beat Oakland by a score of 12-5, and so the Orioles make it 2 out of 3 in this four-game series, and a chance to make it 3 out of 4 in the finale on Sunday afternoon. Tonight, Dylan Bundy, able to pick up his fourth consecutive victory to run his record to 12-8. Sean Manaea was the starter and the loser for Oakland. He is now 8-7. And the Orioles tonight basically won the game in the first inning when they scored a total of 7 times. And Beckham began the game with a base on balls against Sean Manaea. And then Manny Machado came up to hit, and the Orioles wasted no time in taking the lead. So now Manaea delivers to Manny. And there's a high fly ball aimed to left center. This ball is traveling. It is way back there. It's off the wall. Here's Beckham going to third, and Bobby Dickerson is waving him in. The throw back in gets through a couple of cutoff men and is cut off in the middle of the infield, and Beckham has scored on a Manny Machado double, and he missed a home run by just maybe 4 or 5 feet out there in left center. And it's a 1-0 Oriole lead on Manny Machado's 67th RBI. So there you go. Then Scope got a base hit. There were runners on first and third. And then Mr. Jones cashed in. And Manaea delivers to him. As line drive over third. It's a fair ball. Extra bases. That ball is headed for the corner. Machado has scored. Scope into third. He's being waved in. Here comes the relay. Going to be tight. The tag. Got him at the plate. Scope is tagged out. So Adam Jones runs up with a double. And Jonathan Scope, he tried to score from first base on a two-bagger, and just they barely got him at the plate. They did, but Jones did pick up one RBI, and then Mancini came up and the pitch. And Mancini going the other way, line drive, and ball is heading for the corner, and that ball will drop in. It'll drive it a run. Now Mancini takes a big turn, and then he puts on the brakes and goes right back to the bag at first base as Pinder gets it back into second. So Mancini picks up his 61st RBI, and it's already a 3-0 Oriole lead. And right now, Sean Manaea, the young left-hander, is not a mystery. No, he was getting beat up. Orioles are a 5th straight hit. And then Trumbo, he doubled, and then Davis came up to hit. And Manaea with the 0-1 pitch. Davis, ground ball hit hard, base hit right field. Mancini coming in, and now Trumbo is being held up at third base. The ball back in, so that's an RBI single. And the Orioles now with 7 consecutive base runners to get the game started. Chris Davis picks up his 42nd RBI, and before Castillo comes up to hit, that will do it for the left-hander, Sean Manaea. Yeah, he left the game. At that point, Orioles had 6 consecutive base hits. And so that's when Brady came on to pitch Castillo into a four-shot to pick up an RBI, And then Rickard, he got a base hit, which gave Tim Beckham a second at bat in that first inning. Out 2-2, here it comes. Line drive, base hit left field. There's that hit streak again, and this one's going to drive in a run. So here's Castillo, he's going to score. And now Rickard, he's being waved in, and he's going to score. And Beckham, a double to pick up two RBIs. It is now 7-0 Orioles in the top of the first inning. Beckham is at a walk and a single. He's knocked in two in the first inning and has now hit safely in 12 consecutive games. There you go. Beckham a walk and a double, actually, in that first inning. Big inning, 7-run lead. And then Dylan Bundy had to sit down for a while. He came out to work. He walked the leadoff hitter, and then with two outs. And now Davis sends a fly ball, hit to deep center. Oh, boy. Adam Jones way back. That ball is gone. Chris with a K. Davis with number 32 for him to make it 7-2 in the bottom of the first inning. So Bundy eventually did get that third out. And then in the second inning, Matt Olson came up as the leadoff hitter. Yeah, the 1-0 delivery driven to deep right field. Bundy has given up another home run. Way back, long gone. So Olson with his sixth. It is now 7-3. Here in the second inning. And boy, that was a no doubt. Yeah, but after that, Bundy did settle in. Eventually, in the fourth inning, there were men in scoring position for Adam Jones.
And the pitch, swinging a line drive, base hit center field for Adam Jones. Here's Rickard to score. Around third, heading for the plate is Beckham. He will score easily. And the Orioles get two of those runs back and again lead it big. It is 9-3 Baltimore here in the fourth.
Yeah, we talked about
Adam Jones.
Yeah, Dylan Bundy kind of settled in. He gave up two-out single in the third. He gave up a leadoff double in the fourth, but there was no damage done. He allowed a two-out single in the fifth, but again, there was no damage done. He gave up a walk and a single in the sixth inning, but he ended that inning in style.
Chapman at third. Maxwell at first with two down. And the 1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. He got him with a high fastball, so Bundy works out of it. First and third and one down. He gets back-to-back Ks, and he ties his season high with a 10-strikeout night.
And the Orioles eventually enter the game with an exclamation point with a couple of runs, actually three runs, in the top of the ninth inning. It all began on a Gentry double, and then Chris Davis, an RBI single. After a double play ball, Rickard doubled to give Beckham one more at-bat in that ninth inning. There's a high drive out toward right. Racing back is Pinder. He's going to reach out, and he cannot get to it. It bounces on the warning track and takes a big bounce. It will leave the ballpark. And for Beckham, that's an automatic double. He's had a four-hit game. He has doubled three times. He has knocked in a couple of runs, and he has scored twice. Other than that, this guy's a total loss. Exactly. And they win this thing by a score of 12-5. Jim Hunter, he's got Buck Showalter as we continue with the postgame show right after this.
Birds win at 12-5. They've won two of the first three games in this series. Have a chance to get three out of four tomorrow. Let's hear from the skipper now. Head downstairs. Postgame comments, Gary Thorne with Buck Showalter.
Buck, first inning, one of the biggest of the year. You guys just came out, bats were on fire.
Yeah, the guy's been pitching, had a pretty good season for him too, so never really allowed him to get into that changeup rhythm, which has been such a good pitch for him. I thought Adam had the biggest hit of the night. You know, you got second, third, nobody out, and you know that anything can happen here, especially in the big leagues, and that two-out pick-me-up base hit really took a lot of starch out of them.
Did you worry about Dylan sitting so long? We were wondering. Is it, we kept looking at him, yeah.
I was thinking that Jim was probably talking about it upstairs, was he?
Yes.
And I actually, yes, no, but we went to Roger went to Dylan a couple of times and made a point asking if he wanted to go throw, and he said he was going to go out there earlier than he normally does and take a few extra pitches, but, you know, I certainly looked that way.
All right.
No, Castro was cold, you know, because he got hot, and then Alan said he sat around in there so long that I don't think they have many nights like that in Casa de Campo.
Probably not. Strikeout-wise, again, he's had double-digit strikeouts now. Dylan doesn't look like the innings are affecting him at all.
No, there's nothing to prove that they should. You know, it's like that. You go to the doctor and says, does that hurt when you aren't? I do that, and you go, no. Does it hurt when you do that? No. Does it hurt when I do that? No. And about the fourth time, you go, yeah, I guess it's supposed to hurt. No, and he's real, believe me, what he's been through, he's real honest with us, and, you know, everybody's on top of it. But some things happen, as much caution as you take. You know, heck, he could do something out in the parking lot tonight.
All right. Thanks, Skip.
Okay, thank you.